magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I have somebody who has, he's been in the UK magic community for a long time. He's always at a high level. He's done so much awesome stuff. Everybody knows who this guy is. He is incredible. He built a huge brand for yourself, and you really have. I'm talking, of course, about Damon O'Brien. How you doing, mate?
I'm very well, man. Thank you. That was quite an intro there. that was huge. Thank you so much.
True. You know, you've done so much. I mean, sometimes you forget how much that you've done. But I mean, if you think about some of the things that you, and we'll talk about this in the interview, sure. You know, there's magicians watching this that would only dream of being able to do half of what you've accomplished in your career already. So, you know, congratulations on everything that you've done. And I know you work damn hard for it as well. I mean, you.
Yeah.
You work hard.
It's like nothing comes easy. And that's it. It's the hard work. I always tell people, you know, it will pay off. There'll be a lot of, you know, downs along the way, but you have to learn from them. Mistakes you make. And, you know, I'm human. I make mistakes all the time when it comes to, you know, with my career and things I've done. And I try and learn from each one to them to progress it and do better each time after that.
Well, I want to talk to you all about your career because you've done so much. And as you say, there's been some highs, there's been some lows. I want to talk about everything. But let's start at the very beginning, Damon. What was your origin story? What kind of got you into magic? Is it the typical my uncle pulled a coin from behind my ear moment, or is there something different here?
No, I mean, so when I was growing up, the council estate I lived on, the family opposite, and the guy was learned, he was doing magic to kids out on the street. And this is the stuff like when David Blaine just sort of came out, and so it's like this street magic stuff, and I was just more in love with how all the other kids were reacting. I was running and screaming, and I was just like, I just fell in love with that, and I just wanted to be able to create moments like that, make people happy, make them smile and laugh and stuff. And that was it. I usually bugged him. I was like, you know, please teach me one trick. And my first trick I learned was card on the ceiling, which is a pretty crazy trick when you think for someone when they first learn their first card trick. Like, a lot of people don't say that. It's like,
how old were you when you learned that? How old were you?
13. And I spent months, honestly, months learning that trick and coming up with different variations and routines around it. And I was just hooked. And you know what it's like, once you learn one, you need to learn another, because you know, you don't want to be like a one trick pony, you want to be able to do more. And again, I was just feeding off that buzz, doing this trick to kids outside and stuff like that. And yeah, then I discovered Davenport's, and I was there. That was it. I was like, Mum, can we go Davenport's? Can you take me to the magic shop? And bit by bit, it was just like buying tricks, buying books, you know, I was reading like Card College and going through all the Darryl's Encyclopedia of Card Magic, Michael Amar, all these, and this was on videos, by the way, as well, like these were DVDs back then. So it was so great. I just remember constantly rewinding, pressing play and just watching it. And yeah, I just fell in love with magic from there.
That's amazing. And did you gravitate to one particular type of magic? I mean, obviously we know you as a close-up magician. And that's like where your skill set is. Was there a particular, did you ever want to be on stage? Was that a goal of yours, or was it always close up? And what particular, was there a particular type of close up you wanted to kind of do when you first got into magic?
I loved all the close up. Like, I wanted to do close up, and you know, I liked the stage sort of stuff, but I think I liked the rawness of close up magic, of how, you know, that someone is standing 2 feet in front of you. Because there is always that thing where you get people, they sit there, they watch like a stage show, and it's like, I bet if I was on that stage, I'd figure out. And the people, you know, they're like that, right? And for me, I just loved it being so intimate. And I loved doing card tricks. Like, that was my first thing. What really sort of sucked me straight away was all the card tricks, and I wanted to learn them all. And, you know, bit by bit, I started picking up sort of coin routines. I remember first time of like starting to learn coins, I think I was walking around with a coin in classic palm for like 2 months, constantly sit on the train holding it in there. And even in school, like, I was trying to hold it in classic palm, and I've got like really small hands as well. And I was like constantly dropping the coins, and like hear him in the classroom just dropping on the floor, like, and teaching like, I was like, okay. So but yeah, I have always loved close-up magic. And, you know, I've dabbled a little bit in stage. I'm not going to say I'm a stage magician at all. But yeah, definitely the close-up. It's just, I don't know, just think about it. I just really enjoy it.
Okay, so a 13-year-old Damon is doing card on ceiling. He's obsessed with magic.
It's mad.
It's mental, that is. It's mental. You're buying stuff, you're learning stuff. What was your goal back then? Like, you were starting to get really obsessed with magic. Could you see this as a career for yourself? Or was it just something that you were doing as a hobby because you found it interesting?
It was just sank as a hobby back then. Like, I was playing a lot of football when I was younger. And I was really into, I wanted to sort of get into sort of football management. And I was doing stuff down at Millwall Football Club. Like, did all like my sort of work experience. And then I stayed on helping down there for a really long time. And I honestly never sort of saw magic as career. I was just a very, you know, I was a big hobbyist, shall we say. And I just loved performing. And it just sort of took over my life bit by bit, I guess, when it comes to performing. It was, you know, you start at a party and people are like going, oh, we give you some free drinks, do you want to perform? And, you know, when you're young, you're like, free drink? Yeah. And then, you know, it's next year, it's like, oh, if we give you £50. And so, and it just took over my life. And I've always sort of said, when it comes to my careers and with work, I'm only ever going to do which something I'm passionate about. Like, I'm not just, you know, going to do something for the sake of it, you know, for, because it's a job. You know, I used to work in an investment bank. I left that because I didn't feel passionate about it. So it's magic. I'm just passionate about it. I love it.
So when you left school, you mentioned working in a bank. At what point did you say, okay, I'm going to make a career of this for myself. I'm going to go out and try and make money from this. This is going to be my job. Was it immediately after school, or was it working in a bank and not enjoying it that made you what made you decide to kind of take that leap?
Yeah, it was working in like a few different sort of jobs, you know, like, and then going to the bank. And I just, as good as they were, like, for, you know, as a career, I just didn't feel inspired or enthusiastic enough about it. And I always just enjoyed it when I was performing. I was like, do you know what, I want to perform. I want to do magic for a living. And, you know, I knew I kind of maybe had the sort of safety sort of guards there, like, you know, if it goes bad, I guess I could go back to maybe this old job and stuff like that. You know, luckily my mum, she was super supportive of it, and, you know, she got behind me completely on it. And I was just like, I just had to do it for myself. I was just like, you know, I'm gonna do it. And then it was actually the same sort of year I chose to do that, was when David Blaine done the whole stunt in the box. When, you know, and I just looked at it, it's like 50,000 plus people, or something. I think it was that night around Tower Bridge. They're all on there down, and they're watching a man just coming out of a box. And I was just like, you know what? I want to perform. I want to entertain people. And that was it.
That's great. Well, you know, we think of you now as like super successful, and, you know, you're absolutely awesome. Was that the case when you decided to go pro? So when you decided to go pro, were you struggling to get gigs, or did you very easily find the gig? Because we know you as a hustler. I mean, you've hustled, man. You mentioned at the beginning, you worked hard, and that's why you've achieved the level of success that you have. Mm. Did that come immediately, or was it something you had to work on?
No, I had to work my ass off. Like, I started off, from paid sort of stuff, I started off in just local pubs around my area. And, you know, I was performing 2-3 hours for like £50. Most I was getting sometimes was £100. And every bit of money I was earning from that was literally being invested into more props, or to business cards to setting up a website, everything literally went back in. I was making no money, I would say, for the first two and a half years, maybe. Like, seriously, like, everything I had went, and I remember literally getting the yellow pages, calling every pub I could think of, like, and which I knew I could get to. So I didn't drive at that point. I was thinking, right, I've got to jump on the train or get a bus there. Like, can I get there in that sort of time? And, you know, I got knocked back so many times, but I was in pubs. Like, I remember literally walking up to a group of table once going, hey guys, you mind if I show you a bit of magic? And one guy literally told me, he was like, if you don't piss off, I'll show you a trick when I put this knife in your throat. And like, that's the sort of, yeah, seriously, this is the kind of like, sort of places I was performing in. And, you know, it's scary to think, you know, had to do it. I just wanted to show someone a trick. And, you know, bit by bit, I was performing more regular, getting a bit more confidence and taking feedback from people on what they thought, what they, you know, what they believe would do better in the performances. And because people kept saying, like, when you relax, you're so much more better. When you're like, I noticed, you know, at the beginning, we always try to stick to the script to get these scripts with some tricks. And I was trying to go word for word, which is the worst mistake I ever did. And yeah, and then it was just happened one night. I heard about this party up in Tiger in near Leicester Square Piccadilly area, and I just blagged my way into there. I just lied to the doorman, said I was the hired magician for the night. I thought I'd try my chances, and he let me in. And I was just performing magic to a bunch of like reality TV stars and everything, people who have just come off X Factor and or they've been in Big Brother, stuff like that. And I met this guy who was like a talent agent, and he was like, oh, we have a party next week. Would you be willing to come to it? And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, you know, looking at it as an opportunity to hand out business cards and that. And it ended up being one of the Brit Awards after parties. Like, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah. So, and that sort of night, you know, I remember just handing out business cards to everyone I could, grabbing photos with any artist so I could use it on the website. For promotion. And again, like, you know, I wasn't paid for that night. I just literally turned up there off my own back because I knew, like, I truly believed that this time and these investments will pay off eventually.
And that's one thing that I've noticed about you from a marketing point of view. You're brilliant when it comes to social proof. Like, there's photos of you performing to celebrities and all over the place. I mean, is that... that's always been a really important part of your brand. Would you agree with that? Kind of the guy that goes there and...
Yes and no. So there's a weird thing that, like, you know, I don't try and bother them too much, like, for photos and stuff when I'm at these events. But because I do get invited, I'll do it, because at the same time, it's strange. People will look at it as like, okay, right. So say, for instance, you had a photo with performing magic to like Prince Charles or something like that. People having this weird head of like, oh, if it's good enough for them, then it's got to be good enough for me. It's a strange thing how people do it. So it does help. And so, because over the years I have got these things, I think sometimes as with social media, people kind of expect you to have that if they know you're at the same event as people. But yeah, it's definitely, I can't like, it's helped massively, those sort of things. But it's amazing how many of them you actually end up becoming friends with and stuff like, because you see them on those sort of circuits. I've seen quite a bit, and you can't not get talking to them because they say you all the time. And most of them are just super chilled and down to earth, these artists.
That's fantastic. Now, here's a question for you. What advice can you give somebody when it comes to creating a brand? And what I mean by that is you are so unique in that you're yourself. And that's one of the things I respect about you so much. Like, you see so many magicians going out there, and it's almost like you've taken a close-up magician cloning machine and you've just pressed a button 100 times and they turn up in the same suit, they do the same omni deck, they've got the same lines, and you are very different. Exactly.
I've turned up like this.
Yeah, you do. That's it. And that's not the advice you hear on forums. You know, you get a new magician going on a Facebook forum. I want to be a professional magician. What do you do? Buy yourself a suit, young man. You know, and make sure that you're dressed better than the, but I massively respect that. I really do.
Yeah.
Any advice on being yourself? Because people are going to be watching this going, that's not going to work. I can't be myself. I can't turn up at a corporate event and be myself. But you've proven that you can be successful by being yourself, and you can grow a great brand that's recognizable doing it your own way. So cool.
Well, for me was basically like I said, these first sort of few gigs, you know, I did exactly like what you said. Like I was in a suit. I was, you know, going there, performing. I never felt comfortable. I felt like I was like this, like constantly like pulling up the sleeves or just feeling restricted, shall we say. Like I couldn't feel like I could relax. And bit by bit, I started like kind of losing the layers. It was like the suit jacket come off and the shirt sleeves were rolled up the whole entire time performing. And then people like started seeing some of the tattoos and things like that up on the arms. I was like, oh, you're a bit different. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And then I started sort of trying. I was just like, you know what? Let me just turn up one night, just how I feel comfortable. Like when I'm going out doing magic to friends at like a party and being more casual. And I'm just turning up in a pair of jeans, t-shirt, and just went. And I felt like I was performing so much better. Like, I was being more myself. And I remember watching a Jeff McBride DVD, and he said, when you turn up to a party, you want to make sure that everyone's eyes are on you straight away, that they know who you are, that you stand out above all of them. Now, I was like, I don't know, that seemed to just sit in my head for so long. And it was true, because it was like, I'm not like your average looking magician, or like, you know, when you see him turn up, because people, they do have this weird sort of assumption in their head that a magician should be all suited and booted for some reason. And, you know, I turn up to gigs and people think I'm a bloody DJ a lot of the time. And they're like, oh, you DJing, right? And I'm like, no, it's to do magic. And it sort of throws people, and they're like, oh, okay. Like, and it sort of shocks them. And so it's just worked for me, because I will use it sort of to my advantage and everything like that of, you know, do a hot shot into the baseball cap, or, you know, just playing around with little things. And like, it's just worked for me. And I always say, the bit like the more comfortable you feel with your style, the better you will perform, honestly. You know, don't be someone you're not. You know, I've been stupid in the past where like I felt like I was, you know, being shit copies of others, like, or trying, like, you know, like every magician like tried to do the David Blaine type thing where people would just sit there and stare and talk. Let your personality shine. Like, I try and have fun with people. I take the piss out of them when I'm doing a gig. Like, I let them take the piss out of me as well. Like, I find it funny. So just, you know, have fun, be yourself, and you'll notice you'll perform so much better. And I think you are starting to see that more now, like the younger generation got there being more like casual smart, because I never got it when I used to see magicians who performed in nightclubs, not wearing a full suit. I'm like, point someone out in this nightclub who's wearing a full suit for a night out in to have fun. They're wearing jeans, a jumper, maybe like a shirt and jumper like underneath. And, you know, you wouldn't say like, you know, it's not the suit that makes the man. Like, I know there's that saying that goes, oh, the suit makes man. It's not, you know, it's not at all.
Completely agree with you. Totally agree, 100%. Let me ask you about performance, because you have this ability when you perform for people. You'll do the same routines and effects as other people. Yeah. And people will lose their shit. Like, they will get, you know, we talk about the David Blaine style reactions, you know, when David Blaine first burst on the scene and everyone was like running off and screaming. I've seen so many videos of you doing that. And I've seen, I've spoken to some, you know, we've got a lot of mutual friends who've said to me, sure. Oh yeah, that's the reactions he gets all the time. And I'm like, he's doing the same stuff as everyone else. You know, I've heard people in the UK go, they only react like that because they're American. No, I've seen you over and over and over and over again make people literally lose their mind seeing reactions that most magicians would dream of getting again and again and again, doing the same stuff, or but slight variations, but, you know, but variations on the theme. You're doing close-up magic like everyone else, but the reaction level is through the roof. How do you do it? What's your secret?
It doesn't happen all the time. I can honestly tell you that. Like, I've gone to gigs where, honestly, I think I could have cut my head off, put it down, carried on doing the card trick, and they would have gone, great name. Like, seriously, I've had ones like that. They've been that bad. But it is nice when it's, you know, you get those reactions. I think, you know, I honestly can't give you an honest answer of what that is. I'm very relaxed when I perform. As I said, I'm very chilled. I just show I'm human. I don't I ain't one of these magicians who suddenly think I've got supernatural gifts and abilities and stuff like that. People ask me a question, I will tell them very honestly about like magic and, you know, how I learn and stuff like that and what I've done. And I will smile, I've chatted. There's very, a lot of people you see performers, they're very shy, maybe a bit. They're good performers, but like they can't talk about everything else. Like, you know, when I used to perform at some of the football matches and stuff like that, I'm a football fan, so I can happily chat away about football and stuff like that. But even if I wasn't, I'm happy to have a full conversation where, I don't know, it's like I just try and engage as much as I can with people where I make them feel relaxed, where it's okay to laugh and have fun and stuff like that. And something I always do to get people really hooked straight in when I'm performing, the very first trick I'll do, I'll always borrow something personal from them. The very first thing. So whether that's a ring, their phone or something, because they're instantly then invested in the trick. They can't turn it. Like if someone walks over like at the beginning of a drinks reception and you're holding their like wedding ring or engagement ring, something like that, they're not going to take their eyes off you. Like if someone comes over and starts speaking, they'll go like, oh, well, hold up. He's got my ring here. And that gets that next person like, wait, what? So then, you know, you do whatever trick, whether it's like ring flight or something like that. And they're instantly blown away because it's like, they know at this point, it's, that ain't no clever gimmick or something like that. That was my ring. That's a real, you know, item. Like, I know it doesn't just magically vanish or something like that. So I think those little things will help straight away when you perform. I tell people that, like, you know, go in, beat, you know, make it about them. They're the stars of the show, not you. Like, and it should be about them. And that's, I think that's the thing as well where I've missed performing to live like audience because it's very hard to just go, oh, can I borrow your phone? Can I borrow your ring straight away? So,
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the things.
That's, yeah, I mean, that's really good advice. What's your thousand timer, as Greg Wilson would say? You know, that trick that if you were caught with, you know, somebody who could give you the biggest break you've had of your career and you got one trick to impress the hell out of them, what would that be?
Ooh. That's a great one. I know it sounds crazy, but like I always get really good reactions from it, which is pyro perception.
Oh yeah.
Like it gets really good reactions every time I've done it because it's just how, I don't know, because they can feel it and they can see it's not something stuck on, and everyone just goes bananas for that. So I always feel like it's such a good trick, and because you can repeat it again and if we have a different card and everything like that, we're like, oh wait a minute, hang on. It's not just the same card, because I love that when you get someone later on that night and they have to see you do it again and it's a different card, they're like, no, that was like six of hearts or something earlier. I'm like, no, that's completely different. Like, how have you done that? So yeah, probably that. Like, I know it sounds like weird, like, because I know people are like, oh well, I would have done this trick or this one. Just works for me, I think.
But the other thing, that kind of fits your style as well, you know. I suppose it's really important to think of tricks that do fit your image, and you've created this whole brand for yourself. There's certain tricks that you I can imagine you doing perfectly, but there's other stuff like that I wouldn't imagine.
Oh, I'd do horrible. And yeah, there's a subject for horrible.
That's something that you do so well, and I see so many magicians performing and they're doing a trick and I'm like, they're doing it well, but it doesn't really fit them. I can't see that person doing that trick, but your trick selection always seems to be kind of really on point. It's like, you know, your character, you know, your brand, you know, the sort of magic that you want to do and you do it. Is that the case? Do you consciously think, do you walk around Blackpool in the dealer hall going, well, that's a good trick, but Damien O'Brien wouldn't do that. That's not, you know.
I always look at things as like, could I do that in the situations of walk around? Because that's my, obviously the majority of my gigs are walking around, like table hopping and stuff like that, or just, you know, in a drinks reception, you know, mixing and mingling. So I have to try and look at each one as like, could I, you know, make that work for me? And, you know, there's some tricks, I think that they're phenomenal, but like sometimes they could be a bit too story based, like it's a long story based routine. And for me, like, I love it, and I probably sometimes still will end up buying it and think, yeah, cool, like, you know, but it's, I'm probably not going to use that at a gig or something, because I feel like there's a lot of people who just, they want a sort of quick impact, they want to move and stuff like that I want to maybe get from A to B. And so I won't really do that. I kind of try and do things which are a bit more quicker paced and that. So I'm always looking around. But again, like, I don't want to have only tricks that I can do only on social media. Like, I want to be able to do so, because there will be a time that people go, we saw this trick. We want you to do this live at our event. And that booking could potentially be resting on that trick. And you're like, crap, I can't do that live. That's that is for camera only. So I think you always have to be conscious of what you're going to do. And if you're going to do something, yeah, just practice it. But I say to people as well that I look at a lot of gigs as practice as well, because I'm like, Miro ain't going to tell me if it caught it. Like, I need to just go out and also just get a feel with it, whether it's maybe just sitting around with some friends and I try something out and see their reaction, and then slowly you build like a sort of presentation around it, like of how you present that trick. And, you know, I think that's a really good way of just getting a feel for tricks as well. Do they work? Don't they work? Like, and, you know, test it out here and there with also kind of different characters of people as well. Some people a bit like maybe harder to impress. Some people who are super, super like easy to impress, that they react to anything. But if they don't really maybe react to it, it's like, maybe that's not that type one what's for me. So I always think maybe that's a really good way to sort of trial and error for tricks.
Well, here's a question based on what you said there, that's made me think. A question I get on the channel all the time is, what do you do when you've been busted? You know, you've done a trick and somebody's called you out on it or whatever it may be. Oh, you turned over two cards there. It seems, because I get this question all the time, it feels like, especially for newer magicians, it's their morbid fear. Oh my God, what happens if that trick goes wrong? And we've all been there where we've bought that shiny new trick and we've practiced and practiced and practiced it, put it in the gig bag, and it never gets worked in. It ends up in the bottom drawer, because every time we try and do it, we're like, no, it's not going to work. I'm going to stick to the amateur last time again, right? Yeah. What do you have any advice on, like, you know, you said that you go out and you practice stuff because the mirror's not going to call you on it. Taking that approach, how do you deal with it when somebody goes, hey, I saw what you did there?
Let's go, shit, you realize I'm human. Honestly, like, that's it. Like, I just go, oh, I'm human. You find out, shit. Like, and people were sort of like, I think because you're not like insulting them, their intelligence of it, they just sort of laugh. And they're like, you know, I just see no reason to try and lie to them, because then you suddenly see, I've seen performers suddenly get super defensive about that. And they go, well I tell you what, watch this one then. And they're like really on it. Like, and I'm like, calm down, just relax. Go, you know, if they catch, go, oh man, have you seen the trick or something? Like I play it sometimes even like that. And they go, oh no, I got cool, man. Like, most people won't catch it. Awesome. Let them have their moment. Like, you know, and that makes me feel better. Go, and then I'll maybe bring it in, maybe like next one after, or one after that, I'll say to them, tell you what, because you've actually got quite a sharp eye, tell you can help them out with this one. And I make them feel like it's important that they have that sharp eye. And then I'll do like something else where I know they physically can't catch out. Like, I'll just be like, screw you, you're getting invisible deck now. But they just can't work anything out. So yeah, most of the time I don't mind. Like, I when I've dropped cards and out on the floor, I'm like, oh well, like, you know, they care. Like, and or if I do drop cards or something on the floor and people bring attention, go, oh, you dropped some cards. I was like, oh really? Now I throw the rest on the floor. And they're like, what? And I go, pick one of the cards, just like pick one, they say. And then I'll do like sort of like a triumph routine out of that, all the messed up cards. And so then it ends up actually being somewhere. They actually sometimes, well, I've had people question me, go, you meant to do that, right? And I'm like, no, I just generally drop the cards because, you know, mm-hmm. I go, because I'm shit. Like, I just say something like that and they're like, oh, okay.
But what I'm seeing here is that's such an important skill for a close-up magician to have, which is having the ability to not be too scripted. You know, just like, you fly.
You've got to be loose.
Yeah, you've got to be loose based on what's happening. And, you know, you might not plan on going in this situation, but something happens and that, you know, changes things on the fly.
Well, this is when we were shooting Killer Magic, there was like, obviously we had to like deliver scripts and everything. So the production team all knew what we were doing. And I remember like Anthony Owen, he always used to go to me, just, you know, you be a little bit more looser with your scripts. You went, because I like it that you can just instantly like have fun with someone and chat away, and you know, they and this thing, because someone can suddenly make a joke and you can't suddenly be like thrown off by it. You've got to be able to have that bit of banter back with them, like if they come out and say something. Where I remember once, like because it was Jazz, it was very early for Jazz, like coming into Magic on that sort of level as well, and I remember she sort of just didn't say anything for a second and just went straight back into the script and was like, oh, you should have just made a joke. And like, luckily it was only, you know, like sort of like a casting sort of thing. So you know, she was like, yeah, I should have. I was like, yeah, just, you know, it's good to have that in mind, and you kind of know steps, but just chill, just be you, perform and have fun. And when you are doing that, you're so much better performer, because they're going to be, no one can ever anticipate what's going to happen in the exact situation. Like, you know, whether someone just suddenly joins the group of people and wants to say something, or, you know, someone is going to make a joke about something, or as you said, going to go, oh, I caught that. You've got to be willing and know how to adapt. And I think just be relaxed and just, you know, have fun with me.
Great. And I think that, you know, I've talked about this on the channel before, but I think magicians, especially newer magicians getting into magic, they spend so much time thinking about the trick and the technique and the script, that they forget that the most important thing is you've got to walk up to a bunch of people who don't know you, and within 5 seconds, you've got to get them to the point where not only do they stop having a conversation with themselves, but to actually focus
on, engage
on you. Yeah. And that's,
yeah,
that's a difficult thing to do, you know, to just walk up to a group cold and just be the guy that they want to see immediately. I mean, that's...
Well, there used to be this pub I used to perform at, like every other Monday, like really close to where I live actually still. And I remember that there used to be this one guy who was always there every week. And he came up to me at the end and he was like, he went, your tricks are really good. But he was like, when you perform, it's not like over as engaging. He went, I've seen moments when suddenly, again, like you relax and you've had like a joke. He went, that is better. And like, he was just like, I think just, you went, you've got the tricks down. Like, don't be like, you know, oh, it's all about the trick. You know, I think it's all about the performance. And I really sort of took that. And then, you know, I've met like other performers, whether it was from music or acting and stuff like that. And, you know, I try and tell people a lot now myself that 10% is the trick, 90% is the performance. You know, I always say, like, if I've gone to a wedding and performed, I want them at the end of that to really remember me. And then maybe if they're at a wedding, you know, months down the line, they see another magician, they go, oh, you know what? They still remember my name, where they can go to them. You know what? We saw a magician called Damien. Really, really good. Like that. You know, just that you've left a lasting impression where they've enjoyed the performance as well as the trick. Because that's what it is. It's a performance at the end of the day. It's a show.
Perfect advice. Now, you mentioned it earlier, so let's bring it up. Killer Magic. Would you say that was that was your first big break? Like, that was the moment where you're kind of like, okay, I've been going out doing close-up, I've been doing gigs, I've been getting better gigs and better gigs, but now, you know, I've been offered a chance to be on an ensemble TV show. I mean, that must be...
Yeah, it was huge. I mean, I had done Fool Us just before that, when it was over here.
Oh, I thought and Fool Us was after. I didn't realise.
So Fool Us happened before, like maybe a couple of years before. And the actual pilot episode, the one with Ben Earl and John Archer and those guys, I actually auditioned and I completely messed up because so inexperienced, never like really done any sort of stage sort of stuff. And I ballsed it big time. And the production crew, like, they was really, really, you know, relaxed. And I was like, look, we're doing this season now of it, like season one over in the UK. We'd like you to come back and try again. And I went back and, you know, did the routine and it went down well. And even now I watch that back and I'm like, oh, I look so awkward on stage, like just the words I'm using constantly, it's horrible. But Killer Magic definitely was the sort of bigger break, because it was a series where people got a chance now to get to know you a little bit more than the 5 minutes you get for, say, Fool Us, or 6 minutes, whatever it is. So, you know, you're on this show each week and you're getting to play with loads of different styles of magic, so they can see you can do more than just one kind of, you know, trick with one type of genre of magic as well. And because there were so many different personalities, I think that got to come out. Like me and Ben, like I got on so well with Ben Hart. Like we just mess around all the time. And D Chris was like, he's seriously a friend for life. Like I messaged D like daily, you know. And when, like it's weird because if people was to see D and see me, they'd be like, there's no way these two could be friends. Like that, if they just sort of look, because people will, they judge the book by the cover. D is like, he is honestly like family to me. He's like a brother. And we just sort of all kicked, like, you know, got on so well and just had so much fun with it. And Anthony Owen, you know, he helped so much, like little bits, what he would do and tricks and stuff he would say. And people don't realize, like, the very first episode of Killer Magic was, we had some serious people involved in that. Like Andy Nyman was like coaching us with things, what to do and all that. We had Sharky and Long write the full first episode, like of all the tricks going, right, you're going to do this. And it was like, these are like big guys. These are like serious guys. So they actually was the ones who came up with the idea for the card in the fish, like Sharky and Long. So, which like when I was first heard it, I was like, oh, in a fish? You really? Like, I was like, okay, well. And then obviously you got the reaction it did, which I love now still. And but Killer Magic, yeah, it was so like great to just say, oh, we've got our own show on BBC Three. And it suited the style of the show as well, because BBC Three was very like, you know, aimed at the younger generation, you know, and it was that channel you watch Family Guy maybe on later at night when you're chilling in bed and you can be kind of relaxed. And, you know, it was aimed at a lot of students and stuff like that. So I think it worked for the perfect sort of channel. And, you know, it was that perfect stepping stone to take us to the next bit.
And what, how did it come about, if you don't mind me asking? Like, was it off the back of the success of Fool Us that you got offered it? Or was it like everything else that you do, which is hustling and getting your name out there? And
Anthony actually never told me that. I just got an email from Objective. Like, I'd done like a couple of auditions and shows which never sort of happened or anything. And sometimes Anthony was involved and sometimes he wasn't. And it's really strange because I was talking to a couple of people about a similar kind of concept. But I remember going, like, cause I had gone into so many different auditions with Objective. I always had to do like a trick or something like that. I went into this world, I was like, I ain't gonna do no tricks. Like, cause what's the point? They're all magicians. They know exactly what I'm doing and stuff like that. I remember being super chilled in there. I remember like sitting down in the office. I was like this, like right back into the chair, like that, sort of slumped back. And I was like, yeah. Like, I think it'd be good. We was kind of coming up with this idea. I think we need like a magic hero type team type thing, like the Avengers. And I was like, yeah, well, that's what we're thinking. I was like, yeah, it'd be great. And within like an hour after leaving the office, Anthony called me. He was like, do you want to come back Monday then so we can record you for stuff? I was like, okay. Because they even said to me, do you want to do a trick? I was like, oh, I didn't bring nothing. Okay. I was super like chilled about it. I think I was more relaxed in that one than I've ever been for any audition. And I wasn't trying to be arrogant with it. It was just like, you know what? Let me just go in there fully relaxed and just chat and hear what they want to sort of pitch and everything. And because sometimes you could go into those meetings, you know, if it's saying like it's going to happen or not. But I don't know. I think I'm pretty sure probably it was just they had me for other auditions and they was like, yeah, let's get him in. See if he's got any ideas or something he could maybe contribute to it.
Okay, that's great. And I want to ask one question about Fool Us as well. I thought it was afterwards, so I'm going to go back quickly to Fool Us.
Sorry?
You obviously were in the first season, and you know, you actually spoke to them before the pilot episode.
Sure.
Were you a little bit worried doing that? Because that's your first, and what I mean by that is now, and I was speaking to Lee Hathaway about this a little while ago, 8 seasons in, we know exactly what the format of the show is.
Yeah. But
back when you were involved, nobody knew what was the Fool Us concept was, really.
Nope.
All we knew is that Penn and Teller had built a career for themselves out of like taking the piss out of magicians and busting tricks. And it's kind of like, was it a bit kind of a concern going, well, hang on a minute, I could be made to look like a bit of a fool on this program.
Like an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was very worrying because you think, oh shit, if they like expose out everything I do, or like, are they going to broadcast it? And the, you know, the producers and everything were kind of like, you know, they're very trying to keep me relaxed. No, that's not going to happen. If they go too far like that, then we'll cut it. Like, the last thing we want to do is make any magicians look stupid. We don't want that. We want it to be like the best magicians in the world are coming to try and perform for Penn and Teller, and they're going to see if they can kind of work it out, but they're going to do it in code. And then when obviously they were saying like Johnny Thompson is involved and stuff like that, it kind of made you feel a bit more relaxed. Obviously, Johnny Thompson is just, you know, he's a legend. And so, you know, and just even being around him alone was incredible. But yeah, it was nerving again, because so at that point I was still so inexperienced, but I was just like, you know what, it's a chance to gain experience at the same time. And that's where you got to sort of look at it. And you know, I practice, but obviously I said the first time the pilot episode, my own personal fault that it didn't work the way it did, but I learned from it, like I said before, and I went back and have fun.
One thing that I'm getting from this interview, and one thing that you've done over and over again in your career, is you just put yourself out there. Like you just constantly put yourself out there, don't you?
I think you have to sometimes. You just got to jump into the deep end. It's like I think I say, sometimes you have to run before you can crawl. And I just don't want to ever look back and think, man, why didn't I take that opportunity when I had it? Because sometimes these opportunities, they come once. Yeah. You've got to take it with both hands and, you know, try and just milk it for everything it's worth. And, you know, fingers crossed, everything great comes from it. You know, at the same time, you do have to be cautious. Think you've got to weigh up the options too.
Yeah.
But most times, you know what? If you're doing nothing else, why not?
Absolutely. Now, you do Foolish, you do Killer Magic. So now you're riding a career high. I mean, that's two primetime TV shows. You know, people know who you are. Obviously, that's going to lead to better gigs and bigger gigs and more gigs and so on and so forth. But at the same time, you also really started to do a lot on social media, weren't you? I mean, you were like...
Yeah.
You were everywhere on social media. Like, there were viral going up of you.
Yeah, I kind of got this thing because of Killer Magic, doing the card in Fish Trick, I suddenly got a load of food drink type brands coming to me going, hey, look, we want you to do a trick with this. And I think the Pizza Express one was the first one that went viral. Like, it hit like a million views in a day, which, like, at that point, it was like, crap, like, what the hell? Like, and they was doing stuff with the guy from Manifest Food, Adam Richman, him. And obviously, at that point, he was really big because of the shows he was doing for Food Network. So that like sort of worked really well for that kind of brand, and it was just sort of fun. Like, I was doing them, and then more brands started seeing different bits. I was like, oh, actually that's kind of cool, because it's a tailor-made trick. I was doing the trick with a pizza and stuff like that, and social media, like especially Instagram, was on the up sort of thing. Like, it was really becoming the big thing to have, like, to promote yourself. And I just, you know, we was pitching out to brands. I had, like, you know, management as well helping out. Like, they knew people, and it's like, you know, I think this guy would be good. Then we had like Coca-Cola come to us and was like, look, we want to, they was building an app, and I was like, we want to basically put a load of cool content videos together. And I was like, we want you to do tricks with the brand, but also stuff what's not included in the brand, where it's just maybe it's there in the background, so it's not going Coca-Cola down your throat, sort of stuff like that. And so those are ones I liked. I was like, okay, cool, I can just do normal routines, which I enjoy performing. And yeah, it's just bit by bit, like different ones came in. And then I'm quite good at knowing how to approach brands as well. Like, years, even before I had TV stuff and that, I had got like sort of product placement deals from Nike, from New Era Caps. Like, New Era Caps, you know, 13 years later, I'm still sponsored by them, which is incredible to have a relationship that long with a brand, you know. So it was just once you learn sort of the ways of talking to these companies and finding out other people maybe who work with them, going, hey, would you be kind enough to introduce me? Like, I've got this idea, like, and they're like, yeah, but no worries. And that's the thing, like, there's plenty of tricks out at a minute with branded products, which I've got, where I'm like, I'm holding off on it because I want to use it for a certain way. So, and I'm always just trying to think, how could I work in a routine with a brand as well? So I just think it's very important.
And you continue to do a lot with various different social media companies and influencers now to this day, don't you?
Yeah. I do a lot. So, yeah, it's crazy.
So here's a question, and I really am interested in knowing the answer to this. So
go.
you've spent a long time building up your career. Like, you are flying high. Let's know no bones about it. You've got companies, you've got influence coming to you saying, I want to work with you. You've been on TV. Yeah. You've been on primetime TV.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to go on BGT? Because it's not as much of a risk now, is it? Because Rusty Evans is involved in it. Back in the day, it was career suicide. But now Russ looks after everybody. But even still, like, you're at a perceived very high level by your, you know, an influencer comes to you. They want to work with Dan O'Brien because you're the guy to go to. They know that you're going to be a great person to work with. You're going to come up with some great content in a very unique way. You're going to make them look good. But then BGT are kind of all about, well, here's this guy that's looking for his big break. Aren't you worried that there's like some influence there going, hang on a minute.
I've seen him before.
Do you know what I mean?
So I completely get that. And, you know, for years, like, when it's actually strange, because when we was doing Killer Magic, they were still approaching all of us. And I was like, no. Because I still didn't feel like, you know, as we said, at that point, they had magicians where they was taking the piss out of them still sometimes on the show. Because that's how it started. Like, everyone knew, it's like, no, I ain't going near that show. Like, you take the piss out of magicians. Like, that's how BGT very much started, until Russ got involved and sort of really showed them, no, magic can be bloody great on this show if you give it the respect it deserves. And so a few years after, so Killer Magic came out in 2015, and it's like 3 years later now. Like, I had done a few things and I was thinking, what's out there? And I still started noticing kind of like magic on TV was sort of coming down. It suddenly went really mental. It was like, it was everywhere. So it started coming down. I was like, should I do it? And like, I thought, let's just go into the, because I got headhunted for it. And I was like, let's just go in and see what they've got to say. So I went and had the meeting with BGT. I was like, right, let's just see. It can't hurt. And I was like, okay, sounds cool. Why not? And they was very like, look, if it goes horrible, like, promise we'll not show it. Like, it will not go out there. We want to protect you. And Russ, you know, he was like, you know, I'll do everything to try make sure it doesn't go out there as well if it goes, you know, tits up. Because I kept going to him, look, I'm not a stage magician, close-up magician. And I was like, don't worry, like, working routine. But at the same time, I wasn't doing well mentally. I was in a really, really shitty state. And, you know, I pulled out like weeks before the audition. So I was suffering so bad with depression and like anxiety and mental health. And went and got some help. And they approached me again in like sort of summer 2019. Talked to me about coming up with it, and it's like a bit better place. And I was like, okay, let me think. Started coming up with routines, and leading up to the audition, Russ calls me up. He's like, look, I think this routine would suit you freaking perfectly. Like, and everything. And he went, like, what do you think? I was like, yeah, it sounds great. And so we started chatting more and more about it. And I was like, well, if we incorporate this into it, like, and for the phone trick, and I literally jumped on train up to Blackpool to go rehearse with Russ. And for me, it was just like, I felt, because I had been out of it for a little bit of time now, like away from maybe the TV sort of spotlight. And I was thinking, right, what can I do now to suddenly give it another boost again? And I know if you do well, it's such a huge reach what you can get from the show. It is, you know, Killer Magic, we have people watching, but like this show, which is watched by like 8-9 million people at times, you know, that's insane numbers. Like, you know, it's insane. I try and tell people this all the time. Like, it is actually quite scary the reach that show has, like, of viewing audience. And, you know, Russ gets like, he really reassures you. And then I think seeing the success that Ben had on it, guys like Darcy Oak, John Archer, and stuff like that, people I've watched for such a long time. And I was like, you know, why not? It seemed to have done all right. Could it be bad of me? I don't think so. And I was like, I'm going in confident with a routine I think is very strong. That's routine, flawed them. So I was like, you know, it's what you want. So it helped. I felt like it couldn't go bad.
And the audition was the metal phone routine, wasn't it? Was that?
Yeah, that's right. Which, yeah, so that was metal phone routine.
Together. It was so well put together with all the different elements, and it was amazing.
Well, this is it. This was where, like, you know, Russ's influence, because Russ came out with this crazy script, and he was just like, I was like, I don't know if that really feels like me. He went, trust me. He went, it's going to work for you so well. You went like, you went, you're a very chilled, nice guy when you're just talking around. You went like, you're quite sort of softly spoken. You went, it's just going to work for you. You went, I really believe that. And I was like, okay. And obviously no one had done this melt phone thing because it hadn't even come out. It was funny. It came out the same week at Blackpool, like a few days after I filmed it. So I was like, brilliant. And I was like, braggadocio. I was like, yeah, that trick is brilliant. Get it. And yeah, it was just, you know, such a career highlight, that moment. Like, you know, I thought I would get 4 yeses and go, it was great. Never in a million. I could honestly tell you, I never in a million years thought I would get 2,000 people and all four of them stand up clapping the way they did. Like, and obviously TV's edited, it was up for a very long time, and I was like, yeah, seriously, like, I don't know how I didn't break down in tears that day as well, because in my head all I could think about was 2018, of like when I literally was having a breakdown. So it was kind of like come full circle that, you know what, I went back and you know, done what I was meant to do.
That's great. That's an amazing moment. And obviously you then carried on doing very, very well in the, you know, through the whole thing. Was it awkward? Obviously, because when you did the set, when you did the semis in the final, you it was during COVID, it was during lockdown. So
yeah,
it must have been a very different experience to when you were doing the auditions. You know, you've got thousands of people watching you, then all of a sudden you walk in and it's just video screens and four judges and a few crew.
Yeah. It was very, very strange. I think it was harder for people. Excuse me.
It's all right.
Oh, choked. No, I think it was harder for, say, people who are like comedians and stuff like that. I think that was a lot harder for them. Or people who really, really rely on audience reaction for stuff. Because I was doing close-up and it was like, we knew each time it was always going to be about four judges, which were involved. Like, again, it was a little bit easier. And I think it's also like, when you've got, like, so the first audition, knowing 2,000 people were there or watching you, it can be quite intimidating. Where this is like, these are just a bunch of computer screens. And that's how I just try and look at it as like, this is just a light walk, that it's not screens of people at home. And I think that helped massively. So it was, you know, a bit weird because obviously people don't see this, like, because it's like pre-recorded, the semi-final and final. The claps that happened at the right time, because they put in like a recorded clap. So you've done the trick and like, there's like this delay and suddenly this clap's coming and you're like, it sort of froze you. I remember 1 minute at the semi-final, so I went, carry on. I went back into it, but it does throw you a little bit, but it was what it is, and you just had to make the most out of the situation.
And the advantage is you had Ashley Banjo there, who became your biggest advocate. I mean, he was,
yeah,
you know, he, I think he became like a member of the Damien O'Brien fan club at that point.
Like, well, I've known Ashley for such a long time. Like, I met Ashley before he went on BGT, so very, very long time. We met at some event in London and they was dancing. I just was chatting to him and it was strange because I actually straight away that same night, like, you know, people could be very funny about clients with whom they go, oh yeah, like, I can hook you up this way. Like, he just started talking to me. He said something about a baseball cap. I was like, oh yeah, no, I do stuff in New Era. He's like, oh, he went, I'd love to do that. I was like, well, here you go, here's the person's email. Like, I didn't care. I was like, here you go. I went, just tell her I sent you because I've got a really, really good relationship with them. I went, I'm sure they'll look after you. And they did. They was like, oh yeah, no worries. Like, and this thing, I've, like, it's more than a sort of a corporate partnership. It's like I said, we've got full on friendships in New Era. And so, and he always remembered that. And then when I saw him after BGT at, it was like T4 on the beach, he like knew me by name. He's like, oh, hey, Damien, how you doing? Like, and he was like, just chatting away. And that's it. We just became friends. And like, you know, then he asked me, he was like, hey, I'm getting married, do you want to come? I was like, I'd be honored to. And it was actually strange because it came off my Facebook memories the other day saying, oh, about his weddings. I remember saying, it's going to be a long time before I see anyone do a better first dance than that. Like, it was phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah, he is super gracious. But again, the great thing with Ashley was he was honest as well. It was like, you know, the first bit I was like, you know, is it going to be all that? Like, I thought maybe it was this. And then you just took it. So, you know, he was, you know, I felt like it was like he was going to give me a fair shot. He wasn't going to be like, just sing my praises. If he thought it wasn't very good, I felt like he'd be very honest and go, it's not good.
And all of the routines that you did through BGT were exceptional. I mean, really, really well done. The one that you did with, was it Amanda's phone at the end? I mean, I remember watching that. I was like, what? That just makes no sense. Like, was it hard to, you know, you've done such a great, well-rounded routine in the auditions. Was it was some pressure on you to kill it again?
Yeah, there was always pressure. I mean, like the semi-final, the ultimate prediction box, that came in the night before. We changed a part of the routine out for the night before. It was like, oh crap. And quickly was like rehearsing nonstop in the dressing room with it. And just went down well. And then with the last one, we was coming up with so many different ideas. We had this idea from very early, like I was chatting to Russ about, I was like, look, and I told Russ, I want to take a phone and I want it to turn into a bunch of photos, like about a bunch of memories. I mean, I think this would be a really cool thing because we all keep our photos on our phones. Because we were talking about this idea of like, at the beginning of, you know, using a photo in a phone and then like pulling it out. And I was like, let's do this. And then like, I mean, it'd be a really cool moment if we could do it. And it took a while for us to figure out how this routine was going to play. But we came up with other routines before it, and BGT was like, no. That's not, like, we want something more. And I was adamant as well that I wanted to do a phone trick. I was like, I've done phone tricks for the last two. I need to do something with a phone. And so it just worked. And the whole thing with Amanda was like, we had so many different ideas of how we was going to make it vanish as well. And like they was like literally bonkers. And I was just like, yeah, we're not doing that, guys. Like, we're not doing this. And like Mark Lavelle was really helping out loads of it. Mitch O'Brien, Bo Kramer, Bob Pound. I had some really brilliant people like all involved with these routines. And yeah, I couldn't have done it without any of them. And it was such a fun one, that last one. And I gotta admit though, when her phone dropped on the floor, my heart sank a bit. I was like, please don't be broken. Please don't be broken. Please don't be broken. I try to say really calm, like, just pick it up, Amanda. I was like, inside, like, literally crying.
But you couldn't tell that you were fazed by that at all. Like,
oh, I think if the camera panned down to my legs, I would have seen him shaking a little bit. It would have been going. It was definitely gone at that point. I was like, oh my God. Like, and I was like, we're near the home stretch. Just, you're nearly there. Like, but because we kept saying in the rehearsals, like, okay, put your hand over the glass. But what it was doing, it was blocking the overhead shot, which they didn't end up bloody using anyway in the end. And we could have done it. So if it came out, her hand would have grabbed the phone. But I think it kind of added to the routine anyway.
Yeah, it was definitely suspenseful. So, you know, we've talked about your whole career. There's a couple of things that I want to finish up on, because you smashed BGT. A couple of questions I want to finish up on.
Sure.
Have you ever considered like releasing magic to the magic community? Because it's obvious from speaking to you, you're a creative guy, but you've channeled a lot of your creativity into yourself and developing stuff for your clients and your brand that you work with. Would you ever consider like going down the route of, you know, like creating a project that you offer to magicians, or is that something that's never...
I think I would. I mean, I've spoken to D. Christopher so many times about tricks and stuff like that, and we've come up with ideas, and then sometimes they sort of fizzle out. I'm like, no, it just doesn't feel right. You know, like ages ago, I collaborated on an idea with a guy named Neon, which, you know, it was a trick that came out of Alakazam. But I feel like it's got to be right. And it's really annoying. Like, it's like so many, like, you know, people, when you release a trick, or you think you've come up with this great idea, and they're like, I know, but so-and-so's done that ages ago. It's like, damn it. Like, because you've not heard of it. It's actually already out. It's like, I thought it was being creative there. So, no, I think it would be something I would like to do. Anything that is actually helping, you know, someone out with their performances, if they can use it and it can benefit them, then 100%. But again, it just has to feel right that I'm, you know, not just putting it out for the sake of putting it out, that I would feel honestly proud it's out. Because I've seen magicians rush a trick. They want it out just for the sake of saying, I've got a trick out. And then they're disappointed because it didn't do well. And it's like, I think you've got to believe in your product if you're going to put it out. So I think that's probably why I've never put the ones out with B. It's like B's always pushing at me. It's like, man, we need to come up with some stuff to get you out on the 94. And I was like, yeah, I know. Like he pushes me all the time to do it.
Yeah, he's a guy that's very difficult to say no to, D.
He is.
He's an awesome guy. Okay, so let me ask you a question. What's next? And what I mean by that is you're still a very young guy. You've done so much in your career. Like I mentioned at the beginning, if you just said to your average magician, well, you can have your own ensemble TV show. Yeah. If I can get to the final of BGT, yeah. You can go and pin and tell a fool us. Yeah. Like all of this that you work with all the stuff that you do on social media, you have had so many career-defining high moments that have, you know, I mean, so many, there's so many magicians, and there's nothing wrong with this, but there's so many people who get into magic and they just gig and gig and gig and gig and gig and then retire. And that's fine. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
But I think anybody who's a performer dreams of doing something more, and you've done so much. What is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved yet? What does the future hold for Damien O'Brien?
There is a few things I want to achieve still. I mean, like I'm always trying to set myself new goals. I think that's important. Like I would love to do like my own sort of series, like on say like a Netflix or Apple TV, something like that. I think that would be incredible. You know, like you know, a lot of people, we would all love to do that. So I'm always kind of trying to think of ways, how would I, if I was to do my own magic show, what would it be different to make to other people? Like, would it stand out? Like, that's got to be important as well, not to just be like, oh, it's kind of like recycled materials, another show. It has to be something new and catchy where people are going to want to sit down and want to watch it each week if it's coming out each week. So yeah, there's definitely, I would love to still do a TV show. Maybe one day potentially do a tour. I think that would be quite fun to do. But again, I really, really need to work on it. Because again, I'm not a stage magician, so I say that all the time. Like, I've got to figure out something that feels, you know, correct. I mean, look at David Blaine, look how long it took him to finally do something on stage, because he's a close-up magician. And he pretty much done a lot of his stunts and stuff like he's done over the years on stage, which works. So I think it's just having, you know, things happen for a reason. I always say that. And I believe sometimes opportunities just present themselves when you're least expecting it. So for me, it's just like constantly just continue to work hard. Constantly chase brands. I'm probably going to do some stuff with some other brands. I'll be honest, I'm already talking to some other brands about some stuff which is going to come out soon. So that is happening. And we're excited about that. So that'll probably be out later this year, I reckon. I'm just waiting for dates of filming. But yeah, there's always something. And it's just... I think it's being consistent. Don't stop. So you've just got to work. And I think, yeah, there'll be the next things for me, just more branding work. Hopefully, maybe one day another TV show. Who knows? So
fantastic. Fantastic. It has been an absolute pleasure and an honor having you on the channel. It really has
been my pleasure, man. Seriously, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it.
I'm a big fan. I really am. I followed your career right from the very beginning, and you've always delivered. You know what? You are such an ambassador for magic. I bet you there's so many magicians out there, young magicians, that are magicians today because they saw you, whether it be on Penn and Teller Foolers or it be on something else. They're in this game because they saw you do something on TV, and thank you so much. Seriously, thank you. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you. I will. I mean, I always say I'll be doing this until the day I no longer have nothing left to give, and I still feel like I've got something left to give. So I'm just going to keep having fun, and I think that's another important point. As long as you're having fun doing it, keep doing it.
You know what? What a great way to end an interview, because that is absolutely true. If you don't enjoy it, why do it? You know, if you're going to do something,
yeah,
you got to enjoy it, right?
Yeah, you have. And it's the thing. There's so many people are like, you know, they do magic, and I've spoken to them before, and they're like, they're not happy. I'm like, you're still young enough to go just do something else. Be passionate. I always say, you've got to be passionate about it. Like, and you know, magic is, we know, it's a hard career to have as a full-time job. It's a hard career, and I think you've really got to have a drive and passion to want to succeed. And I believe in that thing of law of attraction. If you really want it, it will happen. Like, if you work your ass off for it, it will happen.
Boom. Fantastic. Damon, thank you once again. I'm going to put your socials down below. People can contact you. People can check you out on
follow.
Yeah, all this stuff. Make sure you follow Damon on absolutely every channel he's on, and leave a comment down below. I'm sure you can see them when this goes live. Yeah, guys, make sure you subscribe to this channel as well as all of Damien's as well. And yeah, Damien, one more time, thank you very much, man. Really appreciate it.
Nice. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, bro. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.